Good Saturday afternoon, Wilmington, North Carolina. You are back to Uncommon Sense. I'm Matthew David. It's rainy and not so rainy in Wilmington right now. We've got a special show for you today. We've got a guest calling in live from California, from the other side of the continent. We're extremely excited to have her here. Kat, would you like to tell us a little bit about our guest? Enlighten our listeners. Set them up, because we've got quite a treat for them today.
Well, I don't know how much I can tell other than Angela Keaton from antiwar.com is our guest for today. And she is one of my absolute favorite people that I've met in all of my travels. And you guys know that I've gone across the country and back and a little into Canada. And out of all of the places I've gone, she is one of my absolutely favorite people. And I'm really looking forward to this interview.
Now, all these listeners here in Wilmington, some of them might have thought, wait a minute, what, an antiwar.com person on the Big Talker FM? As a matter of fact, yes, there is an antiwar.com person going to be here right now on the Big Talker FM. Miss Angela Keaton, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. So how are things on the left coast?
I feel awful saying this because I just heard your weather report, but they are in about 75.
Yeah, we could use that. Well, we've had the sunny, and we've had the 75, but I think that it came by about 2 o'clock this morning. It was 87 degrees when I left the house this morning about 8 o'clock, and I think it's just kind of hovered around there with about 100% humidity. So.
And it started pouring a little earlier. We have one of our DJs out front, has a convertible, and she left the top down right in time for it to start pouring. So, oh, gotta love North Carolina weather.
So, Miss Angela Keaton, I guess I have to introduce myself. My name is Matthew David, and it's a pleasure to meet you. I know that I've known of you through Kat for quite a while, and she's never had a bad thing to say about you. I've read quite a bit about your through your website. Huge fan of the writings that I find on antiwar.com. Love Justin Raimondo. Love him. I'd love to meet him one day. So I really want to just take a moment here in the beginning to extend appreciation for what you're doing and what you're trying to do.
Well, no, and thank you. And thank you for reading and caring about peace, because that peace is patriotic. And I know it's something that's very, very important to your listeners in North Carolina, is being patriotic. And there's an amazing history in the U.S. of anti-imperialism, anti-empire, and really focusing on what the novelist writer Bill Kaufman calls the Little America, you know, localism. And he's one of the writers featured in the book Come Home America, which is the companion piece to the initial conference, which I'm hoping we can talk about today, which is kind of the activist part of, you know, what antiwar.com's message. You know, we don't hide the fact that we all come from a libertarian background, the staff is, but we're not a libertarian site per se. We're really a foreign policy site, and we're very, very focused on the particular issue of war. And it's very hard, as, you know, and you mentioned Justin Raimondo, who's really a great figure of the old American right in many ways, where, you know, we understand that empire is expensive, empire is debt. Empire, you know, reduces the civil liberties that the Constitution and that all of us, you know, really cherish. Those, the things that make America great are destroyed, of course, by the military-industrial complex, the warfare-welfare state, or any of the other terms people want to use for the current situation, which is not very American, it's not peaceful, and it's certainly not stable and secure. I thought maybe I'd open with these few words here, and I thought this would be perfect to kind of set the stage.
Sure.
Of all the enemies of true liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From those proceed debts and taxes, and armies and debts and taxes are known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. And that was said by that great commie, James Madison.
I recognize the quote. As soon as you said the germ of all others, I was like, I know this quote. I love this quote. And one of the things that we try to do here on this show, it is kind of the black sheep in a sense. We're off on the weekend, and we do talk about things in a sense that a lot of people may not be accustomed to hearing. And I appreciate the fact that you singled out North Carolina in particular, because one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you is from the perspective of my hometown here, which is just south of one of the largest military bases of the United States Marine Corps on the planet. Camp Lejeune, just up the road in Jacksonville. We've got Cherry Point, Naval Air Station. We've got all manner of military installations in and around North Carolina. We've got Fayetteville, affectionately known as Vietnam. We've got a huge military presence in the community, and it's a celebrated and integral part of the culture here. So what I would like to ask of you is to put the context of what you're trying to accomplish in terms of something that somebody that really loves the military, thanks them for what they do, and is trying to figure out why they should listen to somebody that says war is bad when they've been kept to believe that war isn't anything but a necessity that just has to be done.
And that's why I'm so grateful to be on your show today, because it's people in North Carolina that I do want to speak to, and they're exactly the kind of people we want to give the message of come home America to.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things about, you know, antiwar.com and antiwar, you know, the name itself, of course, confuses people because they assume, you know, we're a bunch of hippies. And
sure.
Of course, really, of course.
Well,
you know,
Angela, you are in California.
California does have its, you know, and California, you know, and right-wing traditions too. It's a, like North Carolina, we too are complex, but, you know, we're not of course, hippies, and we're not from the left, but of course we treasure many of our writers from the left, but we have many writers from the right. In fact, we include writers from all over the political spectrum for antiwar.com. I mean, we're that focused on that particular issue. And what antiwar.com does is provide, you know, very good news and analysis, you know, on U.S. foreign policy.
Right.
But as much as wonderful as that information is, until people act on it, you know, not much is going to change. And this is very important, too, in light of the debt ceiling discussion this week, because as I had said elsewhere, you know, the war issue, you know, involves two things that I think any sensible American should be against, which are death and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and war is that. I mean, the people sometimes on the right will use the term warfare, welfare state, and I mean our right, kind of more libertarian right, to describe the situation where, you know, the largest welfare program we probably have is the Pentagon.
Uh-huh.
And people say, oh my God, what a terrible thing to say. But I want people listening here to really think about what the war means to them, especially because they have people overseas. You know, they have friends and family. This is very real.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make it real to them about why it benefits them to have peace, particularly economically, because the empire cannot be sustained indefinitely.
And that's true, and I think that we're hearing quite a bit about that in the context of all of the economic discussions and things that, you know, we've had just the show that just ended before our hour began. He was discussing the budget deficit and raising our credit limit down the road further. But I think that it's a very solid, easy argument to make that if we would take away 30% of this nation's spending, and I'm just using that term loosely, but if I'm not mistaken, about 30% of every dollar that we spend goes in some way, shape, or form to the military-industrial complex, which is spread so far all over the planet right now that there's not even any perceived benefit anymore. It's just a state of being. Is there even a function to it? Is there a purpose? And if there is, can it be defined in a way that justifies an astronomical cost that is putting people's health care, social security, and internal security at risk?
Well, Leon Panetta just said yesterday, the day before, that we should cut social security and other benefits before we cut the military defense budget.
Mm-hmm.
And however people feel about social security and so on, I mean, understandably that most people do accept that system to some degree.
Sure.
And that Panetta was just bald enough to say,
mm-hmm,
you know, that was where he would cut first, Social Security, things that absolutely, you know, affect the elderly in this country directly. He thought that it would be better to cut there than to cut the budget
right
for going overseas on various adventures. And that, to me, just basically kind of sums up everything I need to know about Leon Panetta and his priorities.
Well, and it also indicates to me a very clear reflection of what he knows. He's a smart man. He knows that his voters must want to hear that message, at least to a degree, else he probably wouldn't be saying it. Would we agree?
Now he's completely protected, you know, by the Obama administration because he's part of that machine now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, of course, the God King Obama can, you know, the Obama administration, or the regime, as I call it, you know, certainly, you know, they certainly feel very open hand in doing whatever it is they wish. For example, the way Barack Obama just kind of decided he was going to have a war with Libya one Saturday morning.
Yeah, isn't that conspicuous? Or is it not anymore? It's not even any more than a news blurb, is it? That used to would have been a huge deal.
Well, I would have liked to think that even conservatives would have been out in the streets when Barack Obama, as the, you know, God King or Emperor, just wakes up and says, okay, you know, I'm ordering the, you know, NATO, I'm ordering it in. I mean, it is his war. Sure. It's his decision to make. Yeah. And it was stunning and frightening, though, of course, how little reaction. Perhaps this is what happens when you do start a war on a Saturday morning, is that very few people notice. But where was the outrage? And that's one of the things I will talk about, too, because the anti-war left, the moderate liberals who comprise part of the loud part of the anti-war movement, there's a lot of guilt. I mean, they've done a lot of shameful things that I think undermined the anti-war movement, and I want to talk a little bit about that, too, because the neoconservatives and nationalists were not necessarily wrong in their analysis of it being an anti-Bush movement as opposed to an anti-war movement.
Well, that's a fair point. I think that most people looking back would realize that everyone that was arm-in-arm with you and your cause when George W. Bush was president sat down and was nice, quiet, student-like, you know, paying attention and just letting things happen as soon as they got their man in the office. And I think that part of that, and I'll let you speak to this as well, but I think part of it was that they really might have expected that his rhetoric about reasonable common sense withdrawals based on facts on the ground indicating that they weren't needed there anymore. They believed it. They believed him when he said that his goal was peace, that his goal was to be the anti-war Democratic candidate. I don't think that they stood up and said a word when they realized that they were double-crossed, because it's the same dynamic that happens in every other political contract. You got your man in there, just let him do his thing. It's better than the other guy.
Well, there's quite a bit of material there to slice into, because it's very, very important for people to understand, I think, what had happened. In the anti-war movement currently, there's always been the hard left element, which has stayed quite consistent. But moderate liberals, and there's empirical evidence for this now, too. You know, Michael Heaney, who's a political scientist, did a study, and he's someone who was very sympathetic to Obama in the early days and very much an anti-war activist, someone who thinks this is, you know, a priority,
right,
and did the actual research. And yes, I mean, you know, all of us have been saying this all along, those of us active in the anti-war movement, that we saw a draining of resources as soon as it became clear that Barack Obama was going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
And there's many reasons for that. I mean, partisanship in this country is very, very strong. It's almost cult-like.
Sure.
And that's what is, you know, happened here. And people are afraid to weaken Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
There's also the issue, too, you're dealing with a lot of white liberals who don't think clearly about these things. And they, you know, it's very important for them to have felt good about themselves.
Right, right.
By voting in what they perceived as a black man instead of actually voting in someone who represented the values they claim themselves to value. For example, someone maybe more like Dennis Kucinich. So there was that. But there's also, too, the Obama administration. I mean, the Obama PR people were really miracle workers. I mean, Barack Obama's real, I mean, he's never been an anti-war or peace candidate under any circumstances. He had four opportunities to vote against.
Sure.
The war. He voted for funding for the war every single time. He managed to base his entire anti-war credential on one speech he made in 2000.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's what he was able to build and manipulate on. But, you know, then again, I mean, was anyone really listening when Barack Obama said Afghanistan is the good war, it's the righteous war, and we should go deeper into Pakistan? And sure enough, Barack Obama, of course, has struck ordered many, many more drone attacks than George Bush did. And considering that George Bush had been in office, at this point has been in office much longer than Barack Obama has, mm-hmm. that's a very damning number.
Sure.
But before we go a little deeper into that, early on in the show, when I was saying I wanted to speak to your listeners directly, it's not just in economics. And I'm not afraid of, you know, I may be a secular Californian, but I'm not afraid of the G word, and that's God,
mm-hmm.
and or the C word, Christianity. Americans are still, unlike Europe, are very, very tied to their spirituality and the Christianity, and it seems untenable to me that with a country that has, like, I mean, where so many people claim those values, that we can have these occupations overseas. And I know the word occupation is kind of, it may be a little difficult or troublesome, but that we have that the U.S. military has a violent presence in these countries where you're killing women and children and elderly.
These are very uncomfortable facts, and we're running into a break here, so you'll have to bear with me here. Angela Keaton from antiwar.com, we've got to touch the bottom of this break here. We have so much yet to talk about. We're really just trying to lay these things on the table, because this is something that I feel is fruitful for everyone to listen to, and I think it's going great so far. Angela, if you'll stick with us, we'll be right back here on the Big Talker FM. (1-800-760-8190) You're listening to Uncommon Sense. I'm your host, Matthew David. On the air with us today, a special guest from California, Miss Angela Keaton, works with antiwar.com. You want to talk about some uncommon sense? We've got it. Welcome back to the show, Angela.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back after that short break.
It's our pleasure. So let's start this out on the foot to, you said that you kind of wanted to have an opportunity to speak directly to the people that live in this part of the country that may not listen to these types of things. I know if you are one that is prone to listen to mainstream media news outlets, including Fox News, CNN, ABC, all the alphabets, you are not inclined to be very aware of the details that an anti-war organization may actually be into. And by that I mean it is easy to caricaturize what your organization is as a bunch of hippies or a bunch of pacifists. You know the litany. You've read all the words. How would you address that to the people that are listening right now that are thinking, oh, this is just some pansy that doesn't want to fight for what's safe, you know, and to keep us safe?
Well, I mean, there's several things, too. I mean, I guess in the general sense, the empirical evidence supports this. It's anti-American in the terms that it tends to be pretty much destroys what we understand as capitalism, because it creates, an impossibly large welfare society based around the military. It's anti-Christian. It's nearly impossible to square godliness and an understanding of the words of teaching of Jesus Christ with war.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can't do it. I mean, I know nationalism has creeped into the churches, but nationalism is something that's unholy and has no place there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go further to say that war is anti-family, and this is something that should be very, very important given the instability, what kind of instability happens when the economy collapses.
Mm-hmm.
Wars separate husbands from wives and fathers from children for very long periods, which is not a natural state. I mean, that's not how normal families conduct themselves. I mean, it creates divorce. It creates children where the paternity is not certain because people get lonely, affairs happen, and then the family completely comes apart. People on the right who are anti-war have asked me very much to include in these discussions, things like the divorce rates of military families, suicide rates, PTSD, which is the fancy name we give to young men who've been totally destroyed emotionally by what they've seen overseas.
Sure.
So none of these things, I think, can be part of a patriotic America. I think these are values that are so clearly anti-American and unholy that a real frank public discussion of what we've become has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But before that can happen, I need to reach people who are not hippies, and this is the whole thing. The anti-war movement has a lot of its own problems that needed to be examined. And one of the things that we looked at is what happens at an anti-war rally. And if they're sponsored by groups that are hard, hard left, and people come, and like say Christians, families, white men from, people from middle America, normal folks who are not active, they come to an anti-war rally, what are they going to see? They get handed
right.
a lot of money on abortion.
Sure.
Gay marriage. However people feel about gay marriage, I mean, I tend to be very supportive, but I can understand that really puts people off when you invite them to you have an anti-war rally and it's every other issue first but the war.
Sure. It almost seems like it's an excuse for people that are anti-something to get together, and war just happens to be the catch-all.
Right. And they focus, I can appreciate, what the people are trying to do with these rallies in some sense, but in order for it to be effective, an effective anti-war rally, it needs to be inclusive. It needs to be welcoming of all people who are anti-war, not just people who are college professors and,
sure.
progressive recycling types. And it needs to be really, really open, particularly to people of faith. And that's something that's been a real shortcoming in the anti-war movement. And, a lot of us took a very hard look after Obama came in. Of course, I come from a libertarian background, so, I mean, Barack Obama to me was just already a war criminal. I knew he was a war criminal in the making. But we had to look at how it was we conducted themselves. And there I just made kind of a mistake, too. But, I called Barack Obama a war criminal. There's going to be people who say, well, he's our president.
Well,
we should respect him. And there I already made the mistake, but one of the things we need to do as the anti-war activists are learn how to speak to people in terms that aren't inflammatory and that don't put them on the defensive.
Well, and Angela, one of the things that I've always considered an important tool in order to frame the debate properly, at least in my personal goings-on and discussions with people in real life, face-to-face, and is to effectively discuss the nature of the individual actions that we are taking. Because I feel like a lot of times, while I personally, morally, agree with you wholeheartedly that war is instantly and automatically wrong, it has to be clearly stated and explained to people that the reasons behind us putting these men in war are not legitimate reasons. They are not there doing what most people on the street think they're doing. Their reasons behind them being deployed in these multitude of places all over the world are not in the context of protection from an active threat, as they are often implied to be. And that when people begin to understand that the entire infrastructure is built up around echoes of threats that are half the time manufactured by the people that are doing the defending, it changes people's opinion, and you start to realize, look, we're not trying to be weak here. We're not saying pack up your guns and go home because we don't want to fight. We're saying you're not fighting for anything that is useful. There is no reason to have your guns out right now. There is no excuse. If there was an excuse in the case of North Korea, for example, or any other place, Japan, Germany, name them, 50 years ago those reasons ceased to exist. If you want to use China, if you want to use the USSR, there's any number of reasons to display very clearly that what we're doing today is not necessary. And I feel if that is something that can be communicated to people, maybe that would change their viewpoint in their defensive mode. But I've used up the rest of our half hour here, so let me finish up. We've got to take another quick break at the bottom of the hour. Angela, will you stick with us for the other half?
Heck yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks a lot. All right, so bottom of the hour, time's flying when we're having fun. 332-6390, 800-760-8190. I'm Matthew David. This is Uncommon Sense, a special edition. Antiwar.com. Angela is on the line. She'll be here on the other side. Peace and friendship with all mankind is our wisest policy, and I wish that we may be permitted to pursue it. There's another presidential quote for you, Ms. Keaton. That's from Thomas Jefferson. Welcome back to the
show.
Another
one of those crazy left-wingers.
Yeah, well, I guess he gets both sides of the fence, depending on who's telling a story about him.
Something that you mentioned, that you touched on a bit, was, you know, the issue of security, and something that... I mean, and it's a, we have to learn how to, I think people in the anti-war movement need to learn how to express this better, but the fact is, the current situation, the wars in Central Asia and the Middle East have made us much, much less secure. And it's not difficult to explain the concept of blowback without using the term blowback, but basically is that people have to understand that, for example, 9/11, that some people use as the starting point in their mind, was reaction to things that the U.S. government had been doing overseas for many, many years.
Yeah, you know, I look at that incident as almost, you know, you hear a really loud noise when you're sleeping at night, and you jolt up and you know you heard something. You're not sure what it is, but you are absolutely paying attention to anything that's happening right now. And all of a sudden, your consciousness is on fire and you're paying attention to the slightest sounds. That is what I kind of envision when I think about America's reaction to 9/11. They were completely ignorant, completely uninterested, absolutely unconcerned with anything that was going on at the hand of their government and the different activities that were being taken in their name up until that day.
Well, yeah, I mean, and if we lived in it, if we had a republic instead of an empire, people wouldn't need to think about what the government is doing so much, because they wouldn't be worried that the government is overseas occupying, supporting dictators, propping up all kinds of, you know, the brutal regimes, that creates terrorism. And we know what causes terrorism. I mean, these are, you know, there's reasons why people do the things they do. It's not just because of some whim like, gee, I really hate the fact that women can wear bikinis in the U.S.
So I can just imagine right now, Angela, some of our listeners saying, so you're saying that this is our fault, that we deserved it?
Well, whether or not you and I deserved it, I'd say that we probably would protest that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's a consequence. It's not necessarily something that's just or fair. I mean, after all, attacks on civilians are unseemly. I mean, they're disgusting. But what motivates a terrorist to do that? A terrorist, you know, in some other context, is a patriot who's just defending his country or acting out. Of course, is now a patriot who becomes a terrorist is someone who's acting out now beyond his borders, now into someone else's space. The reason why people do that is because they're very, very angry with the U.S. government. And it's not the American people. It's not Christianity they're at war with. It is absolutely the U.S. government and what it has done overseas. And it's the interference in regimes, whether it's propping up people like Mubarak or Assad, or whether it's all the foreign aid that's given to the Israelis to mistreat the Palestinians, that is going to cause us problems and make us less safe. It is making it highly dangerous to live in the U.S. I mean, that's the reason why 9/11 happened. And until we stop doing the things that create 9/11s, we won't be safe. And I think I have a right to live in a secure America. What about you?
Well, I would tend to agree. And my philosophy is a very simple one. It's the non-aggression principle. I mean, it's a very well-known principle. Unfortunately, it's not practiced as much as I might like, but that's all that I can do as one individual who is fortunate enough to have a microphone and to speak to others, my thoughts and beliefs, is to offer it to others and think of it the same way, that if you have a choice between an action that includes violence and an action that does not, you must take the non-violent action. It is as simple as that. It is your responsibility as a breathing human being. And I think that one thing that gets lost when a lot of the friends that I have that might fall on the conservative Republican side of the spectrum, and even some on the moderate left, whoever, they all kind of blend together when it comes to war because there are so many justifications given for being in war. It depends on who you're speaking with. But the bottom line is that if they knew, if they understood that the people that are the statistics that we read about, the tens of thousands of human beings with families and children and grandparents and mothers and sons that are dying, I think that these people that are brilliantly patriotic, that are some of the brightest people that I know, might stop thinking about the psychopath 25-year-old terrorist crazy out there and say, you know, it's really not worth slaughtering 10,000 families to get back at one crazed 25-year-old zealot, whether he is a Muslim or a Christian or whatever other religious connotation he's using as his excuse. I don't hear anybody talking about bombing Norway because that psychopath murdered all those people.
Well, no. No, and I'm hesitant to kind of dive in too much of that because that really might. I want to kind
know.
Of keep.
But what I'm, but you're picking up what I'm laying down, and what I'm trying to say is that there is a very, very distinct line between advocating defense on yourself and being vicious yourself. And what I'm trying to say is that for somebody to advocate violence at all is an inherently bad thing. You better have a real crystal clear reason. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, ultimately, I mean, the reason why the anti-war side will win is because it's based in morals, it's based in justice, it's based in also, too, in natural law, in the sense that even blowback is based in natural law. It's a natural consequence to violence. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, even the language that you and I are using, I mean, it's fine amongst libertarians or among the left, but one of the reasons why Come Home America, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that today, is because we need a new peace movement. The old anti-war movement is finished. I mean, another answer rally, all an answer rally does is annoy the mothers of active duty soldiers. It doesn't change anyone's mind. It doesn't also give anyone constructive solutions to how to end the problem. And that's no disrespect to the people who are running anti-war protests. I get it. I understand. I mean,
I think they're preaching to the choir.
Right.
And stirring up hornet's nest. They're not being very effective.
Right. It's a peace movement to be effective needs a real Americans. And I mean, I say that and it's going to upset people, but I mean it. A real peace movement needs to be regular Americans against the war if it wants to be effective. And, you know, with Come Home America, and this is a project that grew out of a conference that was held in February 2010, the same weekend that CPAC, a conference that some of you might be familiar with, was held in D.C., and it brought together people literally from the right to left. And what I mean by right is the founder, George O'Neill, was very active on Pat Buchanan's campaign, and I don't think anyone in your audience is going to call Pat a commie.
Mm-hmm.
George O'Neill is someone, you know, from the old right. I mean, he's an established, you know, successful, white male, and someone who's not in any way, not in any way one can label as anti-American. He's a great patriot, and brought together people like Kevin Zeese from Voters for Peace, and he brought Bill Kaufman, who's a very well-respected writer in libertarian circles, and historian Paul Buell, and so many amazing people, and people from, and I literally mean left from right. I'm talking about everyone from, like, Doug Bandow at the Cato Institute all the way to people from Students for Democratic Society, and, I mean, when was the last time you heard about SDS? But it's that wide-ranging. I mean, Ralph Nader involved. I mean, Ralph Nader, but also, too, I mean, people that you do think of as being, you know, like the American Conservative magazine, for example, is one of the sponsors, and the American Conservative, right in its name, is telling you what it's about.
Sure.
Conservative, and it's committed to conservative values, and one of those values is against war and militarism, because those don't work well with Christian values, with family values, and with a real respect for American history.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kat mentioned that you had a caller earlier talking about, well, where do you draw the line? I mean, that we kind of grew out of the revolution.
Sure.
The thing to overthrow a regime, you know, or a colonialist occupier, it's another thing to go seeking that, you know, to go seeking out war in others. I mean, whatever the rationalizations we use, I mean, my God, I don't know how feminists, for example, live with themselves when they talk about how it's very important to occupy Afghanistan to save women, for example. I mean, it's all kinds of distorts. War is distorts everyone's values and sense of perspective.
Well, it resets the interpersonal relationship between human beings to one of, I can murder you if I have an excuse, to, I can only murder you if you're trying to murder me. And that is a fundamental dynamic change in the way that you can look at another human being. Because if you are in a position where you feel justified under conditions that you can arbitrarily dictate, that you can harm someone else, your whole worldview changes in a heartbeat.
I think that's the most important thing about war, is that we turned it and the government into some grandiose thing. We stopped thinking about
the bludgeon.
You know, we stopped thinking about people. It's not you and me and how we would interact on a regular basis in our normal lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's this big, grand circus, you know? It just turns it into this huge thing where you lose perspective of how humans interact.
Well, and that kind of brings back my thought of, you're picking out the 25-year-old Muslim terrorist, okay? And you are painting an entire civilization of millions and millions of people with this same psychopath's credentials. You are making it astonishes me on every level that it has become such a normal thing to, and forget about the religious texts and all these different violent passages. The Bible has disgustingly violent, vulgar, vile passages in it. Everybody knows that. They're long stories detailing suffering, detailing horrible, horrible flaws and failures of the human race. They go back thousands of years. Neither one of them is going out of its way to tell you that because there's a line in the book that says you can bomb people and go to heaven, that it somehow is a clarion call for an entire religion and justifies their extermination. And that's where I feel like we get lost, Angela, because people take these sound bites and these little tiny ideas, these caricatures, these stereotypes, and they paint an entire culture, a civilization of people.
Well, this is the thing, though. I mean, I'm trying to think about ways of explaining it that I want your audience to connect with, and that's one of the reasons why, with Come Home America, I've been doing a lot of rethinking, and I've been talking to a lot of people about how to talk about the war. And one of the things, too, is, you know, instead of using inflammatory rhetoric, one of the things I want to do is talk to people about a constitutional foreign policy, which is obviously not what we have now.
Sure.
A humble foreign policy. You know, and something too, maybe a lighter footprint. And also, too, asking people, and I think Tea Party people can be very instructive here in asking what the mission is and how much does it cost and are we willing to pay for it?
Sure. And I don't think that that's an unreasonable thing to ask of anybody. I would think that most of our listeners might agree at the same. And since we're kind of coming towards a point of having another break here, I'm going to give out our phone numbers here locally and the 800 number as well, because I would like to have the opportunity to have some of our callers who I'm sure have a lot of thoughts and a lot of different things they might like to think of. If that's okay with you, I'm going to give the phone numbers out. 332-6390, 800-760-8190. We have Angela Keaton of antiwar.com out of California here, and she's talking about comehomeamerica.us.
That's right.
Is that right? Okay, so we're going to continue this discussion on the other side of this break. You're listening to Matthew David on Uncommon Sense right here on the Big Talker FM. Uncommon Sense. Matthew David on the line. Angela Keaton, antiwar.com. A rare treat. Or some people might not consider you to be much of a treat, Angela. Some people don't like hearing these kinds of things. They take them rather poorly.
Well, I mean, and they can, and it's their right as an American. And as someone who's fighting to secure those rights, I want to make sure that they can speak freely, and that's something that they won't be able to do as Bush and Obama support create things like the Patriot Act, which is of course a result of 9/11, and that's something that took a great deal of civil liberties out of our lives. It's a highly un-American act, and that's what the U.S. government, that's what our domestic policy will be based on as long as we continue with these wars, and we'll have fewer and fewer rights. So these actions, I mean, the military presence overseas is hurting my ability to have the Constitution.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that I can testify to after having been on the air here in Wilmington off and on for several years now is that the callers that call into this show, they have plenty of reason to spare. They are intelligent, thoughtful people. They care very deeply about the fiber and fabric of this country, and they deserve to have their voices heard. I think one thing that I've been very pleased with and that has always made me want to come back to this microphone is that no matter what we talk about together, they're willing to listen. They're willing to try to understand. That's why I wanted to have you on the air today, because I know it's a foreign voice on this type of radio station. And I think that it's useful for everyone to come together and talk about these things and not feel like they're being yelled at or talked down to, but just explain your position and share with each other why it is that you spend so much time devoting your life to doing these things. So,
and that's what you're saying about not, about allowing people to do that is to, you know, people in the anti-war movement, and especially people from the left, though certainly not, you know, this is not exclusive to them, I don't want to make that generalization, but they're speaking with an elitist attitude, a I know better than you attitude.
Sure.
Is to win hearts and minds. It just doesn't work. And if you don't, I mean, and we should all be treating our fellow Americans with respect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that will make a positive change. But it is people. But I do think things are changing. I mean, Fox Business News has two shows where you can regularly hear anti-war views.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom Watch with Judge Napolitano and John Stossel's show.
Sure.
So I think this is a message that people are ready for.
Well, and I tend to agree with you. Let's go ahead and go to a caller. We've got one on hold here. Greg, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, good afternoon.
It's good to have you on.
Different discussion, and I applaud you for it.
Hey, man, we try to do something different every week on this show. How's this for different?
This is different. And I've got to say, a lot of the things that you were talking about your audience, I like to think that I live up to that standard so far as being thinking and having a little bit, you know, on the go there.
Sure.
But, This is actually a topic I didn't expect to hear. So, having been in the military, having been in foreign countries,
mm-hmm.
having been a person who studies history,
right?
It's a pretty safe bet that she and I aren't going out to dinner real quick.
Okay,
but
that's fair enough.
I do respect her opinion,
uh-huh.
and you know. I think the end goal is something that we all want, but you know, there's a time you got to say enough is too much,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you punch back.
Well, and that brings up a great point.
I agree with in theory, you know what you said. You know, there's no reason to come out violent. Well, I guess I'm one of those people that can justify bringing a bigger pipe.
And I understand that the revenge factor here, as far as punishing those that attacked us, and that's something that I think, Angela, wouldn't you agree that you would want those people brought to justice as well?
You know, I mean, though I think we probably have a pacifist or two somewhere in the woodpile at antiwar.com. You know, most of us are very, very clear on the right to self-defense, and there's something that we. This doesn't happen very often because usually people on the left are very tolerant of libertarians in the anti-war movement. But an argument I actually had with a leftist activist was that there are basically our entire staff is pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment rights.
Uh-huh.
And some people think that's a contradiction. And no, I mean, I don't think that there's anything. I mean, I don't want violence done to me. But if someone's attempting to do violence to me, I believe I have every right to personally defend myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll walk with you every step of the way.
Well,
that myself.
I want to make it clear that we're not talking about, you know, I mean, for me, and this is probably true of most of the people in the anti-war movement. I mean, yes, there are certainly pacifists there, but you know, not taking this to an extreme where, I mean, if people are infringing on our borders, which, you know, under the Constitution, I mean, this is something we do. I mean, there are reasons to fight back if that's in that sense go to war, and if that is, I mean, if people are actually attacking our country. Absolutely, we should, you know, or individually how, I mean, I understand that there's different ways of doing this, but there should be an attack back. But going out and reaching out to other countries, especially countries where there can't really be a fair fight, I mean, it's Afghanistan or Pakistan or any of these places where no one has the military might of the U.S.
And
there's,
Greg?
There's a big military might.
The difference in the philosophy is, I think, by what you said, I take that as being wait till they get here and then we'll fight versus I say don't let them come here.
Well,
end it over there.
But and I understand that line of logic, Greg, but what I would submit to you is what is the evidence that they ever had any actual intention of coming here other than an isolated attack here and there? It was a great one. It was a horribly great attack, but it was one attack. And I feel like people have so psychologically internalized that one event that it has become an us versus them thing that I don't think is I think that it's missing some of the realities that we're dealing with here, that look, it's kind of like losing a family member. It's a tragedy that we will never get over, but we have
exactly.
to get over it, and we have to move on as a good, peaceful civilization. We can't get so hung up that we change everything that we are.
For someone to have the audacity, it's as if somebody three blocks away came over and just started going off on you in your
sure,
yard.
Sure, absolutely.
Well,
and
yeah. You know, I say lay him down. Lay him out. Let him get taken away.
We've got 2 minutes.
So I'm going to put Greg on hold really quick because we are right at the end of the show, and I want to thank him for calling out.
We always run out of time, don't we?
We do.
I'm sorry. You know we love talking with you. We'll talk again next week.
The one point I wanted to make is what's the end goal with these wars? If you're saying that you're fighting back because of what they did to you or us as a country, what's the end goal of going over there, and how many people do we have to kill for it to have been justified?
Angela, since you've been so gracious as to call and lend us your time for our listeners here, I'd like to give you the remainder of our time to talk about your project and everything else that's going on over there.
All I'm asking listeners to do is go to comehomeamerica.us and take a look at the letter to President Obama. And I think it's a respectful letter, even though obviously we're very against Barack Obama in many ways.
Sure.
But asking him to think about his foreign policy. And I just want listeners and Greg and anyone else who wishes to ask me questions, my email is angela@antiwar.com, and they're certainly free to, and my number is, you can find it on the website, and they're certainly free to call or write and discuss these issues. And I would like, I guess to Greg specifically, I'd like him to ask, what about Libya?
Mm-hmm. That's another good example. I mean, and it falls in line with so many other examples throughout the world today, where we have an overwhelming military force that is trigger ready, but what are they aiming at? What are they there for? Miss Angela Keaton, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you on the air here today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that'll be it. Let's see. Antiwar.com is her primary website. ComeHomeAmerica.us is the other one. You've been listening live to Uncommon Sense. I'm Matthew David in the producer studio, Miss Kat. Thanks a lot for listening. You're going to hear something different every single week, and I hope you take something with you each time. See you next week.